first significant progress on a work of fiction in 8 years. Both of them began to read the first volume of Proust's A la recherche du temps perdu in French, which inspired their work and on which both drew as they continued to work through 1922 and beyond. Lawrence started Kangaroo, his neglected but perhaps most autobiographical novel, written at light speed during his 100-day sojourn in Australia that spring and summer. And Eliot, stopping in Paris for 2 weeks with Ezra Pound, began editing his poem into a 450-line distillation of his years of intermittent and sometimes aimless work. By the end of the year, the blank pages facing them in January were filled. They'd found the words, or were making new words, new forms, new styles, reworking the words into new shapes. Rivalries and jealousy, including with James Joyce and the specter of his Ulysses, had a role in these writers' renewed creativity, as did the various ways each of them gained fresh publicity and increasing renown as 1922 progressed. Reviving the joy at the heart of their endeavors in 1922 is one of the goals of The World Broke Into. In February 1922, Virginia Woolf looked over her shoulder at her friends and rivals and remarked in her diary with a mix of admiration and awful surprise, "How these writers live in their works, how ambition consumes them." How right she was. It is, after all, a great literary period, Ezra Pound wrote to T.S. Eliot in January 1922, adding many additional consonants to all the words. This was a prophetic sentiment Eliot or Virginia Woolf, E.M. Forster, or D.H. Lawrence was unlikely to have shared at that moment. Most people begin a new year with a sense of resolution, a glimmering hope that by this time next year, dreams will have come true, or plans been achieved, or nascent ideas become novels or poems. For these four authors, all among the major writers of the 20th century, the year 1922 began, frighteningly, with a blank page even more starkly empty than usual because of personal travails and the open questions of form, style, and subject that haunted them all. Their shared questions were based in a shared fear that the great literary period, in plain English, that Pound foretold, might be approaching, but it would pass them by. Virginia Woolf turned 40 on January 25, 1922. It was an unhappy milestone. For weeks before and after the dreaded birthday, she was stranded in bed, apparently the favorite breeding ground of the influenza germ, she wrote, and alternately preoccupied by a lingering fever and her equally persistent failure to have yet written a novel that commanded the precise quality of literary esteem she aspired to. After years spent strenuously avoiding writing fiction, her friend E.M. Forster had likewise become painfully conscious of past and impending failures of his own and of his evaporating prominence. "So here I am with 3 unfinished novels on my hands. Even Mother must notice I'm played out soon," he had written in his diary as long ago as December 1913. One of these was his Indian Fragment, 75 pages of which he abandoned the next year before the World War. Born on New Year's Day, 1879, Forster celebrated his 43rd birthday on the first day of 1922. And as January got underway, he was literally at sea, on his way home after having spent most of 1921 in India, more time abroad than he had hoped would offer some direction for the latest of his incomplete novels. But when he returned to England in March 1922 from the Indian sojourn that was meant to inspire him, he was no less adrift than before. As a writer and as a man, he was trapped, having struggled with an unrequited love for Mohammed El Adel, the married Egyptian tram conductor whom he'd met in Alexandria during the war, as laboriously as he'd wrestled with his continuing failure in fiction. That he was well into middle age and living with his mother was lost on no one, least of all himself. T.S. Eliot, that strange young man Eliot, as Virginia once called him, was as uncertain of himself and his work, as adrift, as Forster and Woolf were. He marked the start of 1922 in Lausanne, Switzerland, recovering from a nervous breakdown so severe he had left his job at Lloyd's Bank.